You're listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. Tonight, we talk about Kevin Costner's No Way Out.
Kevin Costner did not direct the movie. It's Roger Donaldson's.
Thank you very much.
Who's Roger Donaldson?
Director of Dante's Peak, motherfucker.
You, no trouble. Me, fifth element. Supreme being.
You will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death, praying for war. But until that day, you are cute. Sound off like you got a pair.
Ah, yes! I was wondering what would break first. Your spirit or your money?
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
God is dead.
He is dead.
Satan lives. The year is won.
Fill your hand, you son of a bitch.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament,
yes.
Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Dead
fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes.
The dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Welcome to the podcast, Movie Crew Podcast, Movie Makers Talking Movies. We're your host. I'm editor Brian Elkins. With me here tonight, cinematographer Jared Kellen.
How you doing, Brian?
I'm good. How are you redoing?
Oh. I'm just hiding and sinning fucking secrets, bro. That's what I'm doing.
Sorry, I worked all day on that joke. I got nothing else.
Well, you have no idea what men of power can do, Brian.
Oh, this is going to be a great podcast. We also have with us director of photography, Mike Griggs.
When I go, I'll go through the front door, Brian.
Please, Mike, just this one time.
Do whatever you want. There's a lot of pleading in this movie. Continue.
There's a lot of pleading in this movie.
We also have with us costume designer, Krista Jones.
Hello.
Oh, and here we are talking about the Roger Donaldson directed, Kevin Costner starring, No Way Out from 1987. Oh, what a classic film, right? Come on, this is the same year as The Untouchables.
That's a strong word for this movie, Brian.
I would say classic. It is probably a classic film because it was referenced in other films, so it obviously hit the it hit the zeitgeist at the time. I'd never heard of it before, but
yeah, no.
It was good. It was good.
Yeah, I've never heard of it, but I actually enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah.
But you guys all knew that scene from Hot Shots Part 2 where they're in the limo,
yeah.
Right?
No.
Wait, you've never seen Hot Shots, Kristen?
No.
I also have not seen it, and I didn't watch the clip. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. You guys are uncultured swine. That's what it is.
What are you looking at, you hockey puck?
It's basically the exact same thing, except for the limo guy's really getting into it. Like he's like changing out.
Oh, so the actual exact same thing.
Yeah, it's the exact same thing, but like you know, and also there's
he
all this.
He changes out the rearview mirror and like gets.
He
a
changes the rearview mirror
shit.
Out from the standard mirror to like a giant like mirror, so he can really see. It's like setting up cameras
lens.
And shit. Yeah, he's bringing out the damn thing that you like look at when you go sightseeing and you have to like look off the Eiffel Tower or whatever those things.
Oh my god!
Like you know
amazing.
He's. And also, like, Charlie Sheen's trying to take the girl's bra off, but it's got the fucking, like, the chain, like, on a door. The sliding, like,
the chain
like,
lock.
What the fuck? He's like, what the fuck? He's like, it's full of ridiculous shit. But amazing.
Very Naked Gun.
With a better soundtrack, because that fucking opening title song over that
Dude.
Scene just kind of ruins it for me.
Oh,
not
was rough. That was rough.
Were you talking about the actual movie No Way Out?
Because there's no way out.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever
right.
that.
Oh,
God.
Have the title song playing during that scene.
No, it was so bad. That was the first note that I wrote. Ew, what is this fucking music?
It's very 80s.
Yeah. It does
there's
make you
80s music that's really good, though. This is not.
Yeah, I was going to say, it makes you appreciate the Top Gun soundtrack just a little bit. You know, maybe all that shit talking I did about Take My Breath Away. Ah, I retract some of that.
So that's a banger. You could still, yeah, you could hate fair. On that that's song fair. Or whatever, but it's still, dude.
Take my It'll breath away. Still get stuck in your head. This shit was like, yeah, what dude. Is going on? Someone put their Casio away.
It was 87. What are you going to do? You know, that's what great music was in 87. No, it wasn't.
The music was so bad, though. Like, all right, we're talking about the fucking limo ride. The music, like, the needle drop as soon as they get in the limo was even more cringy. Like, the scene itself was already like, okay, cool. They're, like, getting it on the limo. All right, got it.
I thought that was pretty great. I like how much fun they're having there, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
I think that that's really awesome. Just how giddy and, like, their whole, like, opening setup. Like, the first time I watched it, I was like, fuck, let's get on with it a little bit. But my second one, I really appreciated the time that we spent getting to know their relationship, which gives it way more weight. And I like how much they're actually into each other. Just like when he turns back and tells the guy, like, hey man, he was watching, hey man, what's your name? Like, he's just so, like, nice. I don't know. He's in the moment there. I think that's a really cool scene.
Yeah, I like the scene a lot. I think they're really playful. I mean, even all the build up to it, even at the party where they don't really talk to each other, it's all just done through looks and glances. I mean, it builds so much and it's so fun. I think a lot of that's just, it's missing. And I really appreciated seeing it on screen again.
I like that garter belt Foley too. Or yeah. What is that what they're called? The little clips that go up to the.
Yeah, so she's. I don't know what the clips specifically are called. But...
Yeah, anyways, yeah. I was like,
yeah. She's wearing a garter belt. No, yeah. like her costume's in this, and especially like just because she's getting undressed. Like, I know we have a conversation every so often about sexy lingerie. Like, this is sexy lingerie.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's what it needed to be.
It was really hair. Nice.
It is. Yeah, it's very 80s, though.
Yeah.
So what? It's fun.
It's
that's
good, though.
What you want it
it's
to be.
It's good.
Yeah, I thought that lingerie was nice. The fur coats are a little much.
I like the
fur
coat
revealing her completely naked underneath that she hands
no,
the coat to
why?
Dude. That was
listen,
like, damn,
listen.
Fucking great, dude.
Why would she take the time
amazing.
To put those clothes back on
exactly.
when she's getting out of the limo and going straight to her friend's house? Like
those clothes are going to be too complicated to put on in the limo, especially if she's going to bed, okay? She's just going to wear her coat.
I think the limo driver requested those as a tip. He's like, you got to at least leave me her clothes, bro.
Leave me something, my dude.
No, it's nasty.
I mean, at least you were set that up, though. They had like five times they cut back to that guy being like, yeah, get some.
and the whole time I was just thinking, Finkel is Einhorn. Like,
oh, because of Sean Young.
She's beautiful and she's great. I was so shocked to see her in this. I haven't seen a lot of movies with her, even though when I think back, I have a little bit. But wow.
I mean, fucking Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Well, obviously Blade Runner.
Dune.
Just saying.
And Stripes, right? Isn't she in Stripes?
She's oh, yeah. She Stripes. Is in Stripes, yeah.
So that's like the first time I'd probably ever seen her. Mm. Yeah. And Ace Ventura, which is where I instantly was like, oh, all right.
I do feel like this is probably... I feel like Sean Young, you watch her in interviews and everything, I feel like this is probably her in real life. Like, she's not acting. Or at least, like... That's
you
the
mean
persona.
She's smitten with Kevin Costner, or
yeah,
just, oh, I you know, like her whole bubbliness and
yeah.
Like,
okay.
I don't want to say the word crazy, but she's a little crazy.
You think she's crazy?
She's a little
no,
crazy,
she's
right?
Not crazy.
She's a little. She's no, a little
no man. No, dude.
She's a little
like
she's just
eccentric.
Okay, I'll take that word.
What are we looking for here?
I like the moment at the airport. Where she like look? I like that look that she gives him. It's so good, and I love that. And also, it's for some reason she doesn't see there's anything wrong with her like sleeping with fucking you know the district attorney guy or whatever. And I don't
Secretary
know.
Secretary of Defense.
That's him. Whatever. Fucking
Gene Hackman.
It's a little different in the job scale.
I don't know nothing about like legal shit.
cabinet of the president, elected to office, lasts for 4 years, runs part of the country.
Okay, Ooh. We needed this prologue.
that was called a civics lesson, Jared.
Oh, I didn't pay attention in that class. Only on movie day when they brought in that fucking like you know how you do a bill.
They brought in my cousin Vinny.
Yeah.
They're like, this is the legal system.
Identical. You know, I have that whole movie memorized.
Mr. Potter, Mr. Potter, or Mr. Trotter.
Back up to Sean Young. Question. I watched the movie about three times over the course of a week. Is Sean Young supposed to be a call girl or a prostitute?
I kind of got that impression. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I also but got not, that impression.
Not a, but like a high end escort. Like, I think she's like a paid mistress. Like, she is called a mistress at some point. She's kept, let's put it like that. I don't think she's a prostitute necessarily, but she is exchanging. Yes. I think the Secretary of Defense is a job.
Yeah. Well, Tom says, I work for David. And she's like, well, I do too.
Yeah.
So it's he just also like, what says does that mean?
He pays the rent when he's like murdering her.
Yeah.
And then there's some other comment later where when they're talking to her friend that she borrowed the apartment from, where something about like they both worked for some place that sounded like it could be like a.
Yeah, like there's some kind of brothel. Yeah, right?
Well,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
The reason I would not necessarily, I'm distinguishing between what she's doing and what a prostitute is because prostitution implies that there's like multiple men, especially in one night. I don't think that's what she's doing. I think she is getting, like, yes, sex in exchange for money, but it's just from one person. And so that's not necessary. I don't think that's prostitution exactly. Yeah, we used to just like they're just referred to as like kept women, and I think right.
I had a hard time reading it in the movie. There's just moments where you kind of get the vibe like it's like oh okay, well, maybe she was a prostitute, and then like you know, Gene Hackman's character was like I'm gonna pretty woman your ass, and I'm gonna buy you a house, and you're gonna come be my mistress, and you're gonna be the solo one. But I don't know, it's weird. Like he gets mad at her that she went out of town with Kevin Costner's character, but at the same time it seems like he just wants to know who it is, not that he's pissed that
he buys her, he owns her. He's not necessarily mad. If there is any jealousy, it's because she might actually have real feelings for this man.
Yeah.
It's not that he's like, oh, but we're in love. Like that's not what they're doing here.
Well,
that's
I'm not
why it's no, I know, but like that's why he would get like upset about it, because she's his property, which is why again I wouldn't call her necessarily a prostitute, because I don't think he would like her to be out, you know, sleeping with multiple men every night, you know, or even multiple men every week. He's paying for her to be at his beck and call, basically. Yeah, kind of like Pretty Woman.
It did have a very Pretty Woman vibe.
Which is why, for everyone who's confused, Julia Roberts turns him down in the movie.
I mean, for all the lengths that the movie goes to establish the romance between her and Kevin Costner, they don't seem to give two flying fucks about what her relationship is with Gene Hackman, besides he expects something and she doesn't fulfill it.
Well, hold on. They do show, like, they show them together, and her whole demeanor is radically different than when she's with Kevin Costner. She's just kind of laying there. She's just kind of like, yeah, okay, what do you want? Like, whereas when she's with Kevin Costner, she's like alive and she's happy and she's having fun. And you can clearly see the difference between the two relationships.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But she's still, like I was going to say, I couldn't get to earlier. She seems like she doesn't really see the issue. She's like, but I love you. You know, she's just like, let me work this out. Let me work this out. Like, I don't see a way out for her in this situation to even try to get this relationship to even work.
So, well, that's she's implying comfortable that there should be situation. A way out, or that there needs to be a way out, that there's something wrong with her seeing multiple men. Like, how many dudes see multiple women and we're just like fine with it? She's seeing multiple men and like we're supposed to be not okay with it because Kevin Costner's not okay with it? Like, fuck off. She's a grown-ass woman and she was doing whatever she wants to before she met him.
Well,
so like that's what I'm saying. Like, the movie doesn't really give us a whole lot of reason to think that it's not okay that she's just doing whatever she needs to do with the secretary until he fucking like blows up on her and then murders her.
Yeah, again, it's not she thinks it'll be okay, and there's not really a way out because that is her job. He is paying her rent. He is paying her lifestyle. And so like, unless Kevin Costner is going to provide all of that, like, what do you want her to go get a job? Like, get the local store? Like, what are we talking about here? That's her job. He has to be okay with it because that's her job.
Being a socialite.
I think they like the term social butterfly.
I do think it's interesting that Kevin Costner starts to have an issue with it, because that's the part that seemed kind of out of character for me, which I guess now that I'm thinking about it makes sense with the twist ending. But yeah, but at the beginning, I was like, why does he suddenly have an issue with it? Like, it's not like, is he like, oh, but I want to have a family with you. You need to be like a respectable woman now. Because he doesn't do that. Like, we don't have this like this moral crisis. He's just all of a sudden like, hey, don't do that anymore.
He was against it the whole time. Every time she brought it up, he was always like, you know, anytime, you know, oh, where did you get this jewelry box? You know?
Yeah. But
oh yeah. She's go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say she had that moment where she said like, oh, I mention him and you turn all sad or whatever. She noticed it about him. Where it seemed otherwise that he was like trying to kind of like hide it and be fine with it. And she's like, no, clearly you have a problem. Let's talk about it.
No, but the jewelry box like from Morocco, like she's interpreting it as you have a problem with me doing this for my work. Whereas with all of the, once you finish the movie, of course you understand he's asking about this for other reasons, you know?
Yeah, he wants to find a way to pin it on her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she doesn't know this and she doesn't ask the right questions. Not that he would necessarily answer, but she just automatically assumes, oh, but you have a problem with me, right? Which is all what we're doing right now, right? Like, we all think, oh, he has a problem with her. Does he, though?
I don't know. I have a hard time reading some of that stuff in the beginning. I like that, though, because, like, okay, so, like, when you get to the end of the movie and you realize that, like, Kevin Costner is this Russian spy that's been in the United States for a long time, and, like, he wants to start a relationship with Sean Young's character to get access to Gene Hackman's character. But does he fall in love with it? I don't know. I have a hard time reading some of that stuff. Like when he goes in and finds out that she's dead and he has the huge breakdown on the floor, is he breaking down because he's like, oh shit, this woman I loved is dead? Or is he breaking down like, oh my God, how the fuck do these motherfuckers know I'm Yuri? You could read that scene both ways when you go back and rewatch
it. It could be both.
I mean, on the second watch, too. You totally feel that.
It's interesting because as I was watching this, I got a lot of like Bill Pullman vibes, which is to say that he's a terrible actor. I don't buy anything he says, but somehow he's likable and I enjoy it. And then when we got to the end and he starts like speaking Russian, I was like, what is he doing? Did he just learn Russian? Like at no point did I think he was this Russian spy.
Yeah,
and I was really confused at the end. I was like, why is he talking to them? Like, did he get a new assignment? Like it did not compute. Because he's such a bad actor that he would.
I'm with you on this, Kristen.
That he would be like a double agent. Like, with a better actor, this movie could have been. I did enjoy this movie, but this could have been even better with a better actor where you're wondering if he actually might be the Russian spy.
The only scene that breaks that is when he actually goes and he gets back in town after his boat ride and saving the guy. And he goes and runs into his landlord. And he's like, oh, I've got some letters for you or whatever. And he shows him his painting and all that. And he's kind of a jerk to him. They wouldn't have that conversation like that in private. If you know what I mean? That was playing to the audience.
What do you mean they wouldn't have that conversation in
it was still an undercover conversation. They were still playing their roles, even though that they're in private conversation. It's kind of like if Bruce Wayne's talking to fucking
No, bro. Like it's no. That's why they have that scene where Kevin Costner comes into that the secretary's office and he just wants to use the phone. And he goes in there and he grabs it right out of her hand. And the secretary's like, if you're going to call your girlfriend, just remember, Big Brother's always listening.
Right.
They always, because they're in the Pentagon, they're in D.C., they always have to keep this thing up.
Yeah.
That's why, like, even when he calls him on the payphone in the place, he's like, I'm on a payphone. This is risky, you know? Like, they're always worried about that. I think that adds tension to it. I love that.
Interesting. Well, they definitely know how to build tension in this movie. Like, that's one of the things that I really enjoy the most about.
Wait,
is
sorry,
it keeps me on my fucking edge.
Did you guys think that the phone calls were to his like Russian contacts?
The one inside the train station is, yeah. When he's doing the subway
he's
chase.
Like, I'm on a payphone.
Yeah. The ones inside the Pentagon are to his lackey that he sent out to some CIA guy.
Right.
Because
he keeps calling.
That's what I thought you were talking about.
Yeah.
But that's not a Russian guy. That's like just a fucking like intern that he's like sent to do some shit basically.
Yeah, but there's a phone call where he goes into like it's in one of the subway areas and he gets into a payphone and he's talking, he's like, no, I can't come yet, you know. I'll get there when I can. And you're like, who the fuck is this dude talking to?
I thought he was talking to the lackey dude that he sent do the things.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And when you get to the end of the movie, that's why he's like, I kept telling you I was trying to get away. And then that's the phone call referencing.
Yeah.
Wait, so, okay, Jared, do you also say that the landlord dude that did the painting was also like a Russian plant and that was...
He's the fucking guy at the end when they pull the fucking mirror back. That's that guy.
Oh, I totally didn't fucking recognize him, but that scene was so goddamn boring. I was like, cool, he's getting mail. Awesome.
Griggs is like, all Russians look the same. I can't tell you Cossacks apart.
I will say, when he comes out of the thing, there was a moment where, like, in the movie, it felt like they were like, see, it's this guy. And I was like, who the fuck is this dude? But, like, the movie definitely thought that I knew who he was. So thank you for informing me.
Yeah, I think that's probably when you look down at your phone with that other scene. One of the biggest problems I have with the movie is, how does he get away with that fucking car chase?
What do you mean, how does he get away with the car chase?
What the fuck is that? Like, he's like, wait, what? And he goes and steals a fucking car, but smashes all around the fucking town, does the whole fucking thing, and then he comes back and he's like, that was a really stupid, stupid thing you did. You know, there's no repercussion. He's back up there working on the damn printer again and all that.
Well, like, they're trying to keep it under wraps. Like,
you can't keep that under wraps, Brian. He went through that should have been all over the fucking news, helicopters, all the shit.
It was a fender bender, bro, and a
bullshit.
It was one car crash. What are you talking about?
One car crash. It was on the bridge. The thing that was stupid about it was he just, like, everybody's driving their windows down, number one, which is stupid. Number two, like, he pulls in front of them, and they just decide to get out and chase him because he stopped them? Like, there was no reason for them.
And then he pulled in front of them. Like,
yeah, but there was no reason for them to be, like, pissed off and chasing, like, because they already knew who the fuck he was. So, like, him cutting them off to them decide, like, they need to foot chase was, like... What the fuck is going on? You know where he works. You know what he's doing.
They're going to kill the witness. He's trying to stop them. That's why he goes to her work and gets her out.
No, I get that. But, like, they decide to, like, chase him instead of just being like, what the fuck is he doing? Let's just go do our jobs.
I don't know. They're going to kill somebody. He's just trying to beat him there. It made sense to me because at the end of the scene, they arrest him in the mall. Like, what if we went to?
I just thought it was kind of weird that we're just like back to normal after that. Just seemed, I was like, whoa, weird. Like, he just went through all this shit. and like, obviously, Gene Hackman's character sent them to kill the girl, right?
No, Will Patton did.
That's right. He's working behind his back. That's right.
Yeah.
Because he's in love with the senator. Because he's gay.
Because he's gay.
So stupid. Oh, no, you don't have to worry about him being the one. He's actually a homosexual.
Well, I kind of like that because I don't know. It shows because there's never like a romantic relationship between Will Patton and Gene Hackman. Even though Will Patton's character is said to be gay, like, I still like view that as like a father-son relationship.
Oh, yeah. No, that's set up pretty well. And like the whole like, let's just give this throwaway line that he's gay and trying to, you know, stay closeted or whatever was just for the sake of later when he goes off the rails, Gene Hackman can have one more desperate plea of like, no, he was in love with me the entire time and he was jealous and he was the one who did it. Dad, don't you see? We can still make this work.
I'll give you anything you want. I'll give you anything you want.
I love that scene.
It's David! A good scene.
Oh, David!
David!
Bam!
Yeah.
That fucking awesome handheld camera. Movie reserved handheld camera work until that moment. Minus a couple moments in the chase. It was nice. And I do really like the suspense building in the script where, like, we got multiple things going on at one time. You got the picture going on constantly in the background.
Constantly. That was a great moment.
Oh, there's just so many different things. And then, like, they start bringing in the witnesses to search the building. There's one. And then there's a second one. And you're like,
Such great tension building. Yeah. That's on the edge. If you're locked into the film by that point, you're on the edge of your seat. It's done really well.
Was it though?
It was, Mike.
Dude, I spent the entire time being like, why the fuck is this bellboy still wearing his goddamn costume when he drove 4.5 hours to come to this fucking place?
Because that way you know who he is.
Yo, they're both in the exact same goddamn costume.
Yes. I appreciate both of them. Actually,
I think it was fine. That way we know who the fuck they are. they cram a lot of story in this 2 hours. You know, like, there's a lot going on. And even though when you think about those scenes, we meet the bellboy, and then the exact next scene is the fucking captain with the boat, you know, and it's these people will come back later, you know. They set that up pretty nicely, actually.
Not bad for a Kiwi.
Who's the Kiwi?
The director.
Oh.
Yeah. This is the good old Roger Donaldson's the guy that brought, you know, Sam Neill to the world.
And what?
Gave him a starring role. What was that? Sleeping Dogs? Late 70s Australian film. It's one of like that and Mad Max are like, you know, the two big movies in the 70s that brought Australian cinema to the world. And of course, you know, he also did Dante's Peak, of course.
I mean, that was one of my favorite movies when I was younger.
And Species and The World's Fastest Indian with Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, right.
And he did the Getaway remake, too.
Oh, yeah. And The Bounty.
Which is hilarious. This is a... Speaking of The Bounty, right? Starring Mel Gibson, yeah. Right? The director of this movie, Roger Donaldson, directed that, right? And he's in Australia, and he just gets done wrapping up No Way Out, and he runs into Mel Gibson. Mel Gibson's like, oh, hey, I heard you you did that remake. And the director's like, what the fuck are you talking about, bro? And he's like, oh, yeah, that No Way Out. That's a remake of The Big Clock. And the director's like, what the fuck? Are you serious? The director had no idea.
Really?
What?
Yeah, he thought it was an original screenplay. I was like, are you serious? Don't they have on the front page of the goddamn script, don't they have if it's adapted or if it's from a source material?
No one reads the front page, bro.
Yeah, you just skip right over that.
No one lets it sit reading. There on the desk long enough to like register what it says on the front.
I'm not going to read all this God bullshit, damn. who wrote what and all their address and all this. Yeah, don't care.
Fuck you, writers.
We all know actors make the movie.
This is true.
Who needs some dialogue? Well, on that note, why don't we take a break? And we'll be back after we watch the trailer for Roger Donaldson's No Way Out.
They needed a hero.
Understand, he has a background in intelligence.
It's two tours with naval intelligence.
Get him here.
He liked excitement.
Take us somewhere.
He wanted her. Their passion upset the balance of power.
What's all this top secret business I've been hearing about over the Pentagon?
You know I work for Bryce?
Then that makes two of us.
This one can do things for me like no other woman I've ever met.
Behind the cover-up.
Try and understand.
The power.
The important thing is to abort an investigation before it ever gets to you.
You haven't told me everything.
Who's running this thing at the Pentagon?
The new boy, Farrell.
So we can take the fall in case anything goes wrong.
The loyalty.
I love you. I promise I'll work everything out.
How did you actually meet the Secretary of Defense?
I need a car. It's an emergency.
These people have already tried to kill one person who knew.
Bring this one down.
No, you can't take that.
Behind the deceit.
If it were your intention to bring down David Bryce, then I'd have no choice but to make sure that you didn't get away with it.
They mean to kill me, Sam.
Because of the truth, there's no way out. Kevin Costner, Gene Hackman, Sean Young, Will Patton, No Way Out.
All right, we're back. That was a trailer for Roger Donaldson's No Way Out. Good trailer? Yeah, good trailer. Good VO.
Good trailer.
It was okay. I wouldn't watch it based on that, but I did enjoy it.
It didn't give anything away. Come on.
Give a lot of stuff away. It just didn't have context for the movies. Yeah. And him like trying to grab her. So like obviously something not great is happening.
You know she's dead. You know she's dead the minute the movie starts. Right? Come on. They give you that foreshadow scene, you know, where Kevin Costner's getting interrogated. You don't know who by. And he's got blood on his white shirt. You know bad stuff happened.
I was, you know, just laid back into it and I was watching it, and when it cuts and she's with Gene Hackman, I was like, what? I had a visceral reaction. I was like, holy shit. Because yeah, I was enjoying their relationship so much, and I was like, oh no.
I was too. I had that same reaction, and at first I was like, oh, maybe she's married to him, because I couldn't remember the details. I just kind of remembered that he was married, and I was like, oh my god, what if that's his wife?
Also, the trailer reminded me how much Will Patton was chewing every fucking scene in this movie. He's really good in this. He's
super intense.
Stand out in this, actually.
Yeah. It makes sense that Costner wanted to bring him back for other things later.
He's in Horizon 2. Spoilers.
Shocking.
Kevin Costner has a contract. I must star, co-star Will Patton.
Uncle Kev, put me in another movie.
He is really good. It's kind of crazy. It blows my mind that Gene Hackman took this part. I mean, this is like, he's already won an Oscar. You know, he's a couple years away from winning his second. You know, he's an action movie star, kind of like during this part of his career. Not the biggest action movies, not like, you know, Stallone or anything, but box office bankable leading man. And this is kind of like a throwaway role. He doesn't really have a lot to do in this movie. He's got the fight scene and he's got the end scene, but the rest of it, he's just kind of poly pissy pants. Yeah.
He's doing dialogue scenes. You know, he's yelling at the other guy. You know, they have heated moments. You know, I think he did pretty good in this. I didn't hate him in this role. I thought
what is he doing in this? Like, it feels so beneath his level of gravitas that, like,
yeah,
it feels like he maybe did it for a paycheck and they convinced him that, like, they needed a little bit more weight behind the things because maybe Kevin Costner wasn't as big of a name yet or something like that. Like, that's the only thing that I can see.
Yeah, they needed a name on that poster because Kevin Costner was a nobody. Like, he had been in Silverado. He was cut out of The Big Chill. The other movies that he was in were not big box office successes. This movie actually just got kind of lucky because The Untouchables came out like a couple months before this movie. And that was his big big breakout. So, like, he had Untouchables and No Way Out kind of come out in the same year. He's got a lot of moments like that in his career. Like, I think Dances with Wolves and, like, Robin Hood were like 6 months apart or something like that. Just,
damn. Wow.
Yeah. Like in 1990, 91, you know, just on his way
maybe
to becoming the biggest
star. That's why he's releasing his new movie like a few months apart, so he has two movies out at the same time. Just to feel like the old days.
Maybe. I can
this
see
is
that.
It's worked for me in the past. So let's make sure we get two movies in the same year, guys.
We got to double it up.
Costner, only one of them can be a Western, though, okay? You got to make a modern
all
movie.
My films are Westerns. Every one of them! In one way or another, they are.
Yeah, I guess all the ones he's directed, yeah. Because I don't know. You would have thought, like, after he won the Oscar for Best Director for Dances with Wolves, he would have gone on and done, like, a whole bunch of stuff. It's kind of crazy. He's only made, like, three more movies.
Well, his follow-ups didn't really kill it, you know.
Well, Postman didn't, but Open Range was a pretty big success when that came out. You know, that was kind of a surprise hit. Everybody wrote that movie off, kind of like they're doing with this new one. I did like seeing the Orion logo. I have never seen that old one before.
Never?
Yeah, I'm used to the one that's in front, like the one that's in front of, like, you know, Silence of the Lambs and Dances with the Wolves and RoboCop with the little
Orion.
Yeah. The stars make the O, and then it, you know, the letters shoot out from the O.
Is that not what this one did?
No. This
it was
in the trailer.
It was very bizarre. Well, the one from the trailer is the new one, too, because it was
that's
like...
That's what I'm saying. That's the one I just remember seeing, yeah. That's why I'm questioning it.
Yeah, I remember being like, I know this logo, or I know this Orion, but this is a logo that's interesting and different. Oh, cool.
Really old.
And what'd you guys think of cinematography from... because this was shot by Kubrick's DP.
Yes. I hate that. What? I hate that it's such a low res copy that we get to see. I don't know how you
really
watched it, Brian.
I have a Blu-ray, so I watched it 1080p.
Well, I'm sure that it looked great.
It did.
I watched it on Tubi with ads, and it was still pretty high quality.
Like, yeah, but it's so there's ads. So many underexposed scenes, and it there's weird, like,
those didn't seem like transfer problems to me. Those seemed like issues with either negative exposures or just like it's fucking old.
There's weird cuts. There's a dolly at the end where we dolly into Kevin Costner's face and there's a cut in it. And I rewound it like six times. I was like, is this just like a stream error? There's a fucking cut when it like pushes in on his reaction. Whenever.
No, that's on the Blu-ray too.
What the fuck is that? You know, there's shit like that.
I think they cut out a camera bobble.
Yeah.
Well, they seemed pretty okay with a camera bobble in the opening shot of the fucking movie. So,
well, that was on a helicopter. Yeah. Come on, with a zoom lens. Come on, that shot was awesome.
And all that stuff.
First shot, like a half second in the movie, it's bum 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 bum. Like, but just fucking cut 3 seconds later. Like, you don't need that part of it. Like, what the hell are we doing here?
I appreciate a lot of the available light stuff they're doing. Like, they'll have all this available light stuff until we land where we're going, and then they'll kind of step into these, like, lit areas, which is kind of cool. Just good storytelling with the camera, nice pacing and all that. Lots of deep focus, lots of really no ND, just, like, fucking closing the lens all the way down. Like, when they're on top of these buildings and stuff, like think about when they're having breakfast when, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And all that. Yeah. You can see every building off in the distance. It's just as deep focus as possible. Very Kubrick. In that way, this guy carried on that deep focus Kubrick thing throughout this film. Even like overall, I've seen it 3 times now, and the lighting is good in a lot of places and really bad in other places. And
really, really bad in some places.
Yeah, yeah. And just like I don't know if that's a timing issue or budget or the director didn't need another take. I don't know what the issue is, but there's a lot of really underexposed and bad stuff.
There's also some stylistic choices that they make, like especially in some of the offices. Like for a movie that is in so many like office building things, there's a lot of like, oh look, there's a fucking like 300 just sitting on the floor, like doing like a little skip bounce into everybody as they're walking in. Like, there's no lamp over there, there's no window over there, there's no motivation for it. They're just like, we need a light, put it on the floor, move on.
I appreciate it. Fuck it, let's get it. yeah, it's it feels like it's quick lighting.
Yeah, I don't know. I found most of it,
and it was his last film,
not pleasing. Was it really?
Yeah,
it was dedicated to him. Yeah, because he died after this.
This was his last movie.
Yeah.
He died while on vacation. After wrapping this movie, went on vacation.
Shit.
Died of a heart attack.
And I was thinking that the reason that those scenes were so dark and not really fixed, because they had the capability to fix these things, especially these exposure things, they could have fixed it a little bit. I think that maybe he was dead before he got a chance to supervise a cleanup.
What are the parts that were really dark that you guys are talking about?
Well, okay, watch so the movie again, towards right? the towards the end when he's
I didn't have that problem.
The one that comes to mind immediately is when he's at the graveside.
Oh, and completely underexposed.
The Russian guys are the only ones who think to go look there. Yeah. Like the first shot where you see him at the graveside, it's like, did they shoot at the end of the day and they just didn't change the film stock or something? Like, it's really, really underexposed.
Yeah.
And then the next shot is like from reverse, from their perspective as they're walking up, and it's like full, brightly lit, like nice fill, all that stuff. Yeah.
There's
3 or 4 moments like that.
There's moments in the movie that are completely underexposed.
Yeah, and I saw some green.
Lots of green.
Yeah, I could see everybody's face and everything on my transfer.
Hey, man, most of the movie looks pretty great, especially for the time. It feels like it's of the time. Like I like the vibe. I like the longer, like, you know, single take stuff that they were doing. All this deep focus stuff is really cool. Overall, it's pretty good. It's not the best, but... like I said, it feels low budget in a way.
You guys watch this on Tubi though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd like to go. I have to go rewatch it.
Yeah, actually,
because
I watched the Blu-ray also and I did not notice any of that. I did, except the grain. Yeah, there was grain. But...
yeah.
I need to see the Blu-ray cut of this.
I wonder if they like, yeah, I wonder if to get the grain down, I wonder if they added like, you know, a denoise filter or something like that on there.
It's very possible.
And then brought the whole level of the whole picture down. Because they do like to clean movies up like that by destroying them.
The first time we go into go into Gene Hackman's office, everybody's like broad lit, and then as the progression moves through blocking, everything lands into like a proper, like, you know, like there's really neat like camera lighting stuff that they're doing with blocking everything. I think overall it's pretty well shot.
Yeah, all of the dramatic scenes where there's conversations happening, and that's where the tension and. I think that works really well. I find the blocking interesting. I find the camera angles really interesting. Where this movie kind of falls flat for me is when it's supposed to be action-y. I don't know if it's – if like the car chase and then the foot chase is what I'm thinking of specifically. Like it just felt very generic. Like it didn't seem thrilling or exciting. There wasn't much stakes. Like, yeah, they were chasing him down, but there was no reason to chase him down. And like we know he's going to get out of it later, so it's just kind of like – I don't know. It wasn't as thrilling as many other chase movies that we've seen things in, Gene Hackman being in several of them.
Well, Kevin Costner does run weird in this movie. I have no idea what he's doing with his hands.
He's no Tom Cruise running. Am I right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but he is jumping over cars and doing shit himself.
No, he's not. You know, his stunt double is, bro. Every time.
Really?
Yeah, every time.
I could have sworn that was him that took that dive into that windshield.
No.
Was that not him?
No, the back of him. That no, that is clearly a fucking stunt double, bro. It's even the wrong hair.
Shit.
It's the same stunt double that's also on the tree. Okay. That's like,
well, I watched the Tubi version,
and they're speeding the footage up while the stuntman's on
while
there.
It's getting shaken,
and he's like, "Oh, I'm gonna fall off this tree." He's like, "Where the fuck is the mat?" Oh, there it is. Bop.
In the Blu-ray version, my last thing on lighting is this movie's got fucking like the fucking lamps are basically the sun.
Oh, you know, every like single all the lamp is bright is just white,
blown out,
yeah,
crazy, and they're like lighting with lamps. I'm like, what the hell are they putting in those lamps to do all this lighting? Because they're actually lighting with the fucking lamp,
including several times where there's just a bare bulb in a lamp just sitting in a fucking corner.
Oh, it's in the corner. Like, it was the bare bulb. Yeah, yeah. Especially with the Russian scene, there's a bare bulb lamp in the corner.
Well, I mean, man, you'd have to for a lot of this stuff because like that set that they're shooting in, especially like in the Pentagon where they're in their like their little control room. Like, they're moving so much. Where the fuck would you hide the lights?
And oh, there's dude, they're a just ceiling. Using, they're using overhead fluorescent, like, you know, and only when they land, when they land, there'll be an edge or like they do a little wrap. Everything else is just walking under overhead lighting everywhere. And when we get in the close ups, you'll actually see a fill come in, you know, and then they cut back out to that medium. It's gone. There's a lot of that going on.
Yep.
Yeah, just such a tight space.
No, like I said, it's shit normal people wouldn't see. You know, overall, it's good. And I had good spatial awareness where everything was, and I like all the set design and all the old offices and all the old computer tech is really fucking cool, you know, for the time. And the dude's wheelchair is so fucking badass. Like, I loved seeing all the, like, the little servos and the way that the fucking, like, worked the wheel, his little joystick, and he's so maneuverable.
What was,
great character.
What is the sticker
the
he's
bumper
got?
Sticker?
Yeah. What was it?
He said, yes, I'm drunk. I'm not a student driver.
Oh, no, I'm not a stunt driver.
I'm not a stunt driver. Is that a stunt driver?
It's a stunt driver, because I remember thinking, like, I wonder if the stunt team gave him that.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. I like his like DP vest with all the pockets in there.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I was going to say Fly Fisher, but you're right.
What do you think, Kristen? How did we do with frick costumes?
I loved all the costumes in this. It was I actually think this is a really great example of like when you don't have a lot of leeway, I guess. Like, this is what it needs to be, but you can still make it interesting. You can still make it something that's visually interesting that you can look at, that you can appreciate. All of the tiny little details on everything, down to the guy in the wheelchair. I mean, I think it's really great. I mean, and at the beginning, of course, you know, it's all those details. You know, she doesn't have to be wearing that lingerie. She doesn't have to be wearing her fur coat. She doesn't have to be wearing, it's the littlest details in this. Like, I think whoever did this did an amazing job and really took care. Even though it's mostly people wearing uniforms, it's mostly people wearing suits. This could have been so boring, and whoever did this made it visually interesting. I mean, this is whenever I complain about movies, like this is what it could be. Okay, like you can take, and that's the other thing too, is that like when you look at like the bellhop and like the fishermen, and yeah, they were wearing the same clothes, but you knew instantly looking at them, it wasn't like, oh, let's just have them wear whatever they decided to wear, you know? Like, you can look at them instantly and go, oh, I know who this is. I know what they're about. And not just that, but you can see, like, the stains on the shirt. Like there's so much attention to detail here that tells you not just what their role is, but it also tells you about that character. And I think that's amazing.
So you love a man in uniform.
Guess the uniform doesn't work.
God damn it.
The only character beat things about Kevin Costner's character I didn't like was his random bits of rage. Like when he rips the fucking telephone off the wall. I didn't feel that, felt so forced, and like his blank face. He didn't have a change of face in that. I thought that was a little.
Does he ever have a change of face?
It's Bill Pullman vibes. Okay, come on.
It's what?
Bill Pullman vibes.
Bill Pullman. That's okay. That's where you're leaning into that. Like when he does that, and then another time he gets angry, and he like when he's talking to Will Patton, where he's like the really bad idea or whatever, man. And they have a little thing, and he like pushes all the shit off the desk. Rah! You know, he has these little like tantrum moments.
Yeah, he doesn't. The tension
he's never
moments,
aggressive any other way.
I think are really good. It shows him losing control, but again, you need like an actual actor for that to have any sort of presence.
Yeah, because he goes from like straight plain face to, oh, now I'm angry, and he just like flips a switch. Like, this is the part where I'm supposed to do that thing. You don't really see it building on his face. You don't really hear it building in his voice. Like, I don't ever hear him like fighting back tears or sounding confused. He's always monotone. He's always the same level. And I know, honestly, legitimately, after seeing several Costner movies in a row, I don't understand his appeal.
You guys are dead to me. You're fucking dead to me.
Brian, I'm just pointing out those moments. I also enjoy a Kevin Costner smolder. I
all right. Yeah. You can come back to the fold.
Okay.
I don't know about these other two.
No, listen, he's not a great actor, but he's fun. He's a lot of fun, and I enjoy somehow watching him. At some point, you just have to be like, it doesn't really work for this movie, though, but you have to be like, okay, this is his character, so you just have to assume that this is what he's going to do. And it doesn't work for this because he's supposed to be a double agent. He's supposed to have all this stuff going on internally, and that's the only reason I think it doesn't work here. Does that mean this isn't a great movie? I actually know I love the movie, I think. And I think he's fun in it. No, but he's not a good actor.
Oh, but come on. When he finds out that the woman's dead and he like goes off to the bathroom and has that moment, hey, that was good.
Yeah. Was it great? No.
Yes.
It was great. No. It was great.
It was fucking great. That was great.
Fucking De Niro couldn't have done that moment
better.
The only
thing that he needed to do different was maybe puke and then have to like, you know, clean it up and get it off his shirt or something.
Oh, could he puke? Oh my God. Imagine him like spitting like a can of peas out onto his like shirt. That would have been great. Yeah.
And then you get to have possessed. Him say the line twice. I need to go change. You know, and then that would have been a callback.
Yeah.
Well, no, they already did that. He already changed once in the office. You walk around the corner and see him like zipping up his pants or some shit. Or was that later when he was changing?
That was later when he was changing his pants.
There was another time before that. Like, I was like, oh, yeah, no,
he's always
he has
put
clothes
his pants
there.
Back on, yeah. Mike. another weird thing about, you know, leading up to the suspense with them bringing in the witnesses. The fisherman guy, the guy who runs the boats, they're like, what does he look like? Is he a black guy? Is he a white guy? Is he tall? Is he skinny? Is he fat? And he's like, yes, all of those things. Why didn't he say he was wearing a white officer fucking uniform? I just saw him. He's wearing all white. How many motherfuckers in this building are wearing all white like that?
Because then it would have wrapped up the movie really quick, Jared.
What the absolute fuck? This motherfucker can't recognize this motherfucker's wearing solid white? I just saw him.
He's that way.
I recognized his face wearing all white from fucking 50 feet away. Oh, there, that guy is right there.
He's a fisherman. He can tell you all the different kinds of fish in the sea. He don't know all the different white people at the Pentagon.
He can recognize
a
random normal-looking white guy. Bullshit. Brad Pitt is face blind, and he also has a cameo in this movie. But like,
oh my God, that dude looked exactly like fucking Brad Pitt. I was like, holy shit.
That is Brad Pitt.
There is not Brad Pitt in this movie.
No, Brad Pitt is in this movie.
Wait, what?
Early Brad Pitt
It's his first film. He's uncredited.
Yeah. Yes.
Shut up.
He's in the tribe that sticks their tongue out. You know that shit? He's the guy that's going, like laughing and clapping and shit. Yeah.
Wait, the one on stage?
No, he's like you know, fucking Kevin Costner walks right past him. And he's on
the left side of the screen?
He's on the left side of the screen.
Holy fuck, because I saw him. I was like, that dude looks exactly like Brad Pitt, but that is not Brad Pitt. Maybe it's like his brother or something.
That is a young
Holy
Brad
shit, Pat. That's ridiculous.
Didn't even notice him. I was just, you know, waiting for Costner to show up. I was like, who's this Brad Pitt guy? He's going to be a nobody. Who cares?
He's going to sit on a couch one day and get famous.
Wait, what?
Isn't he the guy on the couch? What's the movie where he's
You're talking about True Romance.
Yeah,
I was
True
like,
Romance.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
I was like, no, Tom Cruise is the one that jumped on the couch.
No, he jumps on the couch. Fucking Brad Pitt's just the guy on the couch. They always come back and he's on the couch.
Fucking high as shit, eating cereal.
Just fucking baked. Yeah, just baked out of his mind. Yeah. what was the budget on this thing, B-Rock?
Like 7.
15 million.
15?
Really?
Yep. Made 35.5 in North America. Don't have worldwide numbers.
15 is probably about 40, 45 today's dollars, maybe-ish.
Yeah, they definitely don't make too many movies in this budget range anymore.
I mean, they put a lot of production value on screen. There's a lot of locations and trying to make it feel like it's a lot of government places.
Yeah, but it feels contained, though. It's got scope a little bit, you know, because we get out in the city. We have the aerial shots we see. I actually like that opening crazy fucking, like, aerial shit. We see all of D.C.
Oh, that's a cool helicopter shot.
And then it goes in, and we see the Pentagon, and then it goes over, and it like, goes in on the fucking house we're in. I love that. I think that's fucking great. You know, there's good world-building stuff, but it still feels kind of contained.
Well, you want it to. You want it to feel claustrophobic at the end.
Yeah. Overall, that's good. What do you guys think about this random motherfucker pulling a straight razor? Just out of nowhere. He's got a straight razor.
I was
razor.
Like, where the fuck did that come from? You're going to pull a straight razor.
Like, what the fuck? He gets cut.
On
he's
a
like,
fucking
the fuck? Where did you get
stairway
that?
Fight. Like, and all he does is just like, I'm just going to hit your arm with this real quick. Bloop. Like, it's not a knife. It's not a fucking, like.
That should have laid his ass way razor. Open, like, too. Wait, like, what? Yeah. What
you're,
an interesting.
You're bleeding.
Did you just watch Dexter? Like, what's happening? Like, this guy just happens to have a straight razor in his pocket.
It's the 80s, you know.
Yeah. Sweeney Todd. Like, I don't know. What's he doing?
Sweeney Todd.
Well, he's associated with the special forces.
Oh, so that they carry all kinds of weapons.
I guess. All kinds of special killing devices.
You'd think they'd have, like, a Bowie knife or something, not a straight razor.
Right? Yeah, just exactly. This guy's randomly carrying a straight razor.
Maybe he's, like, the guy in Predator that was always, like... shaving,
he's got shaved dick though. Yeah, I just see that guy. He's like, you know what? I think I'd carry a straight razor. And the director's like, fucking, I don't care. Just do it.
is that all props Fair brought enough. Today? God damn it!
Well, no, they were supposed to be like ex torturing military mercenary guys. You know, he's like, you guys run the death squads. You know, or whatever. He kind of like shouts some. That was some of their torture technique they carry. Who knows?
I guess.
It shocked me. I was like, where the fuck did that come from? I wish he would have like picked it up from somewhere or something. You know, it's just so random to pull a straight razor.
I did like one of the Death Squad goons was fucking Quado from Total Recall.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's why he looked familiar. Holy what? Shit.
Oh. It was cracking me up, man. The minute I noticed him, I was like, oh, no, it's that goon.
And what's the cop that comes in or the guy that comes in and brings in the little jewelry box? Was that fucking Mike from fucking Breaking Bad?
Mike from Breaking Bad. I don't know. Man. I've never seen Breaking Bad.
No, I don't think it was. I don't
Better
think
Call
he was
Saul?
In this.
Like younger? Yeah. Let
me see. Unless I just don't recognize him with hair. You're talking about like the lackey, like the intern dude that like he sends around?
And he's really big in Better Call Saul. Jonathan Banks.
No idea.
You'll continue able to look this up.
Did you guys like Iman's role in this?
Who?
Sean Young's character's friend
or best
boss.
Friend?
Very, very, very famous supermodel.
David Bowie's wife.
David Bowie's
that's
wife.
That's his wife?
Well, yeah, was before he passed away.
I thought she was pretty good, actually. She had, like, three lines, but it was good.
I didn't like her first scene, because, I don't know, she didn't have anything to do. But, like, when they come and interrogate her, she was great.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. She, like, yeah, the little look interactions that she has with Kevin Costner, like, actually played really well and had some subtlety and nuance to it. That was really nice. Yeah. And you could see her, like, working things out. I thought she's a better fucking actor than Kevin Costner. In that one fucking scene, she kills it. Better than he did in the entire movie.
Shut your mouth, Griggs!
She has shit going on behind her eyes. He, the entire time, it's just like...
He's just giving her the death stare.
Face.
Like,
yes.
Don't you fucking dare. Yeah. I like him picking up that vase behind him, the vase. He takes the flowers
out. He's like,
ready
this is about to go real bad. He's taking
ass.
The flowers out, weird. Like, nice and slow.
Editing note there, I don't think we needed to cut in. I know that we needed a beat because the fuck their conversation was going on too goddamn long. We didn't need the close-up of him grabbing the vase.
No, because that lent too much weight to it. I was like, oh,
yeah.
what is he about
like,
to do with
we
it?
We already can see what he's doing. And then, like I said, the only thing I could see in that scene was just because there got so much dialogue to get through, so we had to cut to something. But, yeah, it wasn't needed. That felt forced. It's also the same thing like when he's his flashbacks of remembering getting the photo taken. All that just feels like superfluous. We don't need it. Even though that in the actual photo scene, his hands are not up when she takes the photo. They're down. Continuity error there.
Well, you knew
that's
as
just
soon
watching
as that
this
fucking
three times.
Camera
you know, I'm
came
seeing
out.
All these things.
No, that whole moment where he's like dancing around on the fucking bed and she's like gonna take the picture. I'm like, they're gonna bounce around for a minute and then whatever the picture is supposed to be later is not gonna be what it actually looks like in the moment.
Does,
you just know,
not.
Yeah,
it's not.
Anybody got anything else? Or are we at ratings?
Jonathan Banks was not the guy that I thought he was. So yeah.
Wait, what?
It wasn't Jonathan Banks.
What wasn't Jonathan Banks?
The guy with the damn box who comes in with the jewelry box. Oh, that, you know, yeah.
The Breaking Bad guy. No, okay.
Not him.
Gotcha.
Let me look through my notes here. Why couldn't the guy on the fucking boat just pull himself up? What the fuck was that?
He was basically drowning, Jim.
Was he?
No, that entire scene was like just the most like flimsy excuse to have him
be a hero.
A hero, yeah.
It would have played so much better if he was already on the deck and the guy slipped and he was like, "Oh no, man!" And the guy falls and he's dangling and he's got to like get him. But that whole like crawling on your belly while people are throwing water on you and this that all just I don't know, man. That,
the
all
stupid
that
guy
felt, so.
Shouting, "Keep the light on him!"
Keep the
like
light
he's
on
doing
him.
Something. Yeah. Like, okay, we get it. You want to be helpful, but like, oh my god, it was so.
Come
long.
On, Brian. Don't. You're, oh,
you guys are fucking
on.
Insane, man. $15 million. $15 million. They got a boat and they had a fucking. It was like a mini Titanic. Oh. Get the fuck out of my face. $15 million. Dollars. That's the stretch
of
your budget.
I thought what was more impressive was actually fucking Kevin Costner and the lady like actually like sailing. They're doing these maneuvers and they got a camera follow boat next to them and they're doing these maneuvers around them, getting really cool shots. I was like, oh, that's really impressive.
Yeah, because
no lighting there,
he's
though.
A Navy
like
man.
Totally underexposed some of that stuff, but it's kind of cool, you know, seeing the actual actors doing these things.
You guys are insane. That boat thing. I thought that was incredible. I was like, I can't believe they...
You thought that was like, that they were selling that moment with that guy just hanging upside down there?
It was fine. Who gives a fuck? It's a boat. They put a boat. It's a
battleship.
It's a battleship.
Oh my god.
Okay. All right. It's like when you see a helicopter, you're like, holy shit, a helicopter! Like it just takes everything else out of it.
They built
a
fucking whole set, dude. They built a whole set for one scene in a movie, and they got their budget under $15 million. Like, what the fuck? Name one goddamn movie you've seen in the last 10 years where they spent that kind of fucking money and accomplished that. I can't think of one.
Waterworld. No.
That was in 1995. That was in 1997.
They built the Postman, that whole damn set.
And the top of it was CGI.
Yeah, I know.
Come on, man. No, it's incredible. 1987.
It was a good set. It was a good water effect. Like, the storm felt realistic. The scenes just went on way too long. Like,
I just thought the guy hanging upside down was low-key. I was like, what the hell?
Yeah.
I'll give you that. But, I mean, whatever. He's upside down, you know. Like, I mean... Okay, so, like, they built the set. You can't show the bottom because that's the fucking tank. So you can't show the guy go off of the bridge because then you have to build another fucking set or another fucking tank. All right? So it's a budgetary issue. So what do you do? I mean, does it take me out of the movie? No.
No.
Is it amazing for what they did at that time period? I think so. Yeah. I think it totally sells for what it is.
But it's my job to nitpick it, Brian.
Look, I want to nitpick the things that are like gross oversights that people fucked up on. It's just like, what the fuck were you motherfuckers thinking? You know, I don't know. I think that shit's impressive. That shit's cool. I'm here for that. Anybody got anything else? Well, let's rate this thing. Who's going first? Who's rating No Way Out? You guys are really quiet. All right, so I guess I'll go first. I'm going to give this a 9.5. I think it's pretty good. I think the music holds it back.
Ooh, yeah.
Not just the needle drops. This really hurts me to say, but the score kind of sucks. It's not so bad during the action moments. It's almost kind of forgettable, and you kind of get into the moment. Anytime you get the suspense, but man, you step away. Any of the romance. This is from Maurice Jarre, the motherfucker that composed Lawrence of Arabia. So,
wow.
Yeah, right? It's kind of painful that it sucks. But, man, I really love everything else. I love all the actors. I think it's a real nice political love Hitchcockian tale, man. It's a really good, tight thriller. And we don't have too many of these. And, you know, I know a lot of people don't like the twist. But I think it works pretty well in the movie. I know a lot of people don't buy that Kevin Costner would be the bad guy. And, I can kind of get that. He's got that, like, good boy, what am I looking for? Midwest, you know, Americana vibe there going on. But I don't know. I think it works pretty well. 9.5. Who's going next?
I really like this movie. I think Kevin Costner is a terrible actor, and I didn't believe anything he did for a second.
Breaking my fucking heart over here.
But it works. Well, it all works until the end when you realize he's a Russian spy, and then you're like, wow, this really great movie could have been like even better if it was a proper actor. But that being said, I still really, really enjoyed it, and I think there's so much here that... Yeah, there's a lot of suspense. There's a lot of... But, like, even visually, I mean, considering that I normally hate movies where they kill off the woman and then spend the rest of the time talking about it, like, it's... they did a pretty good job, actually. It was pretty suspenseful. I was invested. I actually just thought it was more about, like, government corruption, not Russian spies. But, you know, whatever. It works either way. I'll give it an 8. I liked it.
All right, an 8.
Do the negative review so I can bring us up.
All right, all right, all right. Fuck, man.
He loves it. He gave it a 10. Move on.
All right. So,
no, I'm just kidding.
Okay. The twist, giant air quotes, at the end of the movie kind of ruined it for me. Because everything up until that point like was a little hokey and a little cheesy, but like worked for what it was trying to be, I thought. There was plenty of like 80s action tropes. Some of them felt a little bit more contrived and forced than others, but for the most part, like, you understand who the characters are, you understand their motivation. I don't think Kevin Costner sells any of his character motivations, but apparently lots of people think that he's endearing or cute or whatever the fuck. Sure.
He's got the riz.
When you put the fucking end of the movie and you try to retcon the entire thing, and there was not a single moment in that entire goddamn movie that like actually gave you some nuance to like connect back to and be like, holy shit, it was. That's a problem for me. Like if you had a different actor who maybe had some nuance, if you maybe told the main actor that he was supposed to be this and he like actually like incorporated some of those things into some of his character motivation, like maybe that'd be interesting. Maybe it's just because Kevin Costner has nothing going on behind his eyes, and so I didn't see anything that he thought he was doing. But that kind of ruined it for me. I don't know. Maybe if I watch it a second time, some of that stuff's in there, but I didn't see it on the first time, and that's a problem. The music was fucking terrible. Like took me out of the movie from the first fucking note that they played. It was really, really bad. Will Patton is fantastic in this movie, as he is in pretty much everything that he does. I love the energy that he brings to his roles. That dude has shit going on, and I appreciated that. I did not really love what's his name playing this the secretary. Gene Hackman felt like a little bit of a throwaway. I need a rent paycheck kind of movie. Maybe he was supposed to be like that. Maybe he wasn't. I don't know. I wanted to like it more than I did, but it was moderately fine. It's a 7.
A 7.
All of that for a 7.
There's too much goodness in it to be a terrible movie. Like, the production design is fantastic. The cinematography has some really great moments. I didn't like some of the lighting choices, but like the blocking and the way that the scenes move and the way that the coverage works, I think is really, really interesting. I think there's plenty of tension that happens in like I said, the dialogue scenes. The action doesn't quite work as well, but you know what? It doesn't necessarily have to. This man went on to direct Dante's Peak, which was the first movie that I remember seeing and being like, holy shit, movies can be intense. He knows what he's doing. There's just not... It does not always work, and I think most of that is Kevin Costner's just blandness. If you like vanilla white bread shit, then yeah, here's a middle America white bread dude for you. Cool, he takes his shirt off. Well done.
Vanilla's great, you just gotta put chocolate syrup on top.
No, man, you need a Wonder Bread sandwich with fucking Duke's mayonnaise in it. Let's get it.
Xiong Yang is amazing in this movie. I loved every part that she was in it, including her moment of shouting from the convertible, I love you. That was the part that solidified their relationship, and I was like, cool, this is fantastic. She's about to die.
I love Tom Farrell. Mike, you disappoint me. Oh. Now, I receive everything you said, and I get your point of view, but Maybe it's because I do love Kevin Costner because I grew up with Kevin Costner. I had a little Kevin Costner fucking Robin Hood action figure when I was a kid. he actually had like a real cloth fucking like tunic on. It was pretty badass.
Damn.
With a bow and arrow that you could shoot. Yeah, man. I thought this movie was pretty fun. And I enjoyed all the fucking actors, man. Like we just did a double feature with Will Patton here, and what a treasure. I didn't mind Gene Hackman in this. I don't know. I also liked seeing him in it. I don't know, it was like hanging out with old friends. And I always loved seeing Sean Young. I really enjoyed watching the cinematography of this and thinking about Kubrick the whole time, and about how certain things were maybe influenced, or where was that his influence to begin with. Very interesting. Overall, very enjoyable. I will tell people to watch this. I will be buying the Blu-ray for this because I want to see it in a better light. I'm gonna give it a 9. It's definitely on the watch list.
Blu-ray is worth getting for the Roger Donaldson director commentary. He does a pretty good job.
Roger Donaldson's modern spin on the dense, stylish suspense films of the 1940s features fine work from Gene Hackman and Sean Young, as well as the career-making performance that made Kevin Costner a star. Rotten Tomatoes brings No Way Out in with a 92% tomato meter and a 73% audience
wow.
score.
Well, at least the audience is correct on this one.
92. Oh, that's right. The Costner love. God, man. I just want to tweak my nipples right now.
Whew. He'll be back. Where else does he have to go?
I don't know. He's got no way out. So with that, you've been listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so by sending us an email to moviecrewpod@gmail.com. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Movie Crew Pod. Jared, where can the audience follow you?
The audience could follow me on Instagram at Check the Gate.
Griggs, where can they follow you?
I'm on Instagram at Griggsy Media. That's GRIGGSY Media.
And Kristen, where can they find you?
You can find me on Instagram at Kristen Magdalene. That's Kristen with a K and an I.
You guys can find me on Twitter at Elkins Edits. And we're going to close out the show tonight with... You know, I was thinking we could do some of like Maurice Jarre's score, but... You know what? Let's not do that. Let's do that awesome needle drop. No Way Out. We'll play an excerpt to that.
Yes. Classic.
Enjoy.
When I looked in your eyes, I could see us together. Now I find myself here, just wondering whether I should turn back.